We're holding on Cofuentes, Umwood Bays, the next to last line of the narrow lines. We've been learning about Bnoist Slofhod and the and then we've been working out the details of how much territory they ended up getting in Eretz Yisrael and the various opinions about how Eretz Yisrael was divided up among the Jews who entered it, whether it went according to Bali Haaretz or Yotze Mitzrayim and all of that. So now we started at the end to talking about the actual description of what happened in the Psukim when it says that they came to ask their question. So we started with who did they ask first? When the Pasuk mentions they said they asked Moshe and Elazar and the Nasiim, etc. Does that they certainly didn't ask in that order? So either it means that it's in reverse order, or it means that they were sitting in the Beis Medrash and they asked them all together. So now the Gemara continues. Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Bnoist Slofchod Chachmonius Hain. These Bnoist Slofchod were wise in Torah. Darshonius Hain, they were capable of darshaning. They were able to understand one thing from another in the Psukim. And Sidkonius Hain, and we see that they were Sidkonius, as we see, as we're going to go through, we're going to show how from their story we see all of these compliments about them. So Chachmonius Hain, what do you mean they were wise in Torah? Shalafi Shah Dibru. They spoke at the appropriate time. So they didn't now here. They didn't just stand randomly come one day to the Beis Medrash to ask the question. They waited until an appropriate opportunity presented itself. The Amr of Shmuel bar Yitzchok, Melamed Shoyim Moshe Rabbeinu Yoshev V'Derush Parshas Yevamim. So what happened is from the story of what from Bnoist Slofchod's argument, we see that at the time when they first came forward with their claim, Moshe was sitting and darshaning about the parsha of Yevamim, about the whole concept of Yibum. Shenema, the pasuk says, "Ki yeshu achim yachdav." When brothers are living together, and then one of them passes away, then you do then one of his brothers has to do yibum, and he's childless. Then one of his brothers has to do yibum with his wife. Now the pasuk says over there, "Uvein ein loy," where it says over there that he doesn't have any children, and we darshin, as we learned earlier in the perek, that ein loy means ayin olav. We darshin from the word ein that it means investigate, meaning it's not just a matter of whether he has a son. It's also if he has a son's son or a son's son's son, etc. You have to go down the tree and see if there's anybody, going down as far down as you can among descendants of his, and if there are any that are living, then no yibum is needed. And in fact, now yibum would even be also then, as we look way back in Masechta Yevamos, because then she's also to him as a brother's wife. So the point is, in other words, so now they had an opening. So Omruloi, now they said to Moshe, Im keben onu chashovim, if we girls are considered the equivalent of a boy, tnal lanu nachla keben, then we should be given a nachla, what would have gone to our father's tzlafchad, like a son. Because after all, when it comes to Yibum, if you're telling us that ayin olav means that not only if he has a son or descendants of his son is his wife Potter from Yibum, but also if he has daughters or descendants of his daughters, well then in connection with Yibum, then if you're telling us that daughters are considered like sons as far as Yibum, then good, we should be considered like sons also as far as Yerusha. The im lav, and if we're not considered like sons for that purpose, tisya b'mimenu, then our mother should be able to do Yibum one way or the other. Our father's name should be perpetuated, whether by us getting his Yerusha, or whether if you're going to say that we're not entitled to Yerusha, then it means it should be considered then that our father passed away completely childless, and then in that case, then our mother should do Yibum. Miyad, so right away, Vayakrav Moshe's Mishpatim Lifnei Hashem. So as the pasuk continues, Moshe brought their case before Hashem to ask, okay, so which is it? Are they considered the equivalent of sons, or are they not? So we see, in other words, they were chachmonious in that they knew to bring up the point at the right time with a logical argument behind it. Then darshonius hain. What do we mean that they were darshonius? They knew how to darshan and how to derive things from psukim. Namely, they said, Ilu hoya loy ben, if our father had it, when they said, they say in the pasuk, ki ein loy ben, they say, why should our father's name be lost from his nachla? Ki ein loy ben, because he has no son. So that implies, in other words, so they're saying, ilu, so they're saying, ilu, ilu hoya loy ben, if he had had a son, loy dibarnu, then we wouldn't be speaking up in the first place. Meaning, in other words, that Ashbam explains, they knew already the basics of Parshas Nachla. We had, in fact, earlier, when the Gemara had asked what exactly, at the bottom of the previous Omud and the top of this one, the Gemara had asked what was Moshe Rabbeinu's suffix in the first place. He knew already that the daughters inherit. The only question was whether they get the chelik b'chora. So the Rashbam explains in keeping with that. Then so they didn't know. So the point is they knew already that they're going to Yarshin. But they knew also that when the pasuk, they knew also to understand that when the psukim say that that if he doesn't have a son, then you give it to his daughter. Now earlier in the perek, we had Rapapa asking, maybe the pasuk implies that when he has a son, then the son gets it. When he has sons and no daughters, then the sons get the nachla. But we said, but Rapapa had asked over there, maybe if he has sons and daughters, maybe it means that neither one gets the nachla. And then the Gemara had said, what do you mean neither one gets? So then who's supposed to get? So he said, maybe it means that they inherit equally. The point is, they knew that all of that is not so, that it definitely means that if there are sons, they're going to Yarshin exclusively. So therefore, they're saying, if we had any brothers, if our father had left any sons, we wouldn't even be asking the question in the first place. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation, though, because if they knew already the parasha of Nachlas, first of all, we said the whole parasha of Nachlas was only written because of this story. Or no, we said it would have been written anyway, but Hashem caused that it came about. So now it was first told to Hashem, and a couple of other questions. So Tosfos says, no, there's other places in Shas, and not, you know, there's other places in Chumash where we see that boys are supposed to Yarshin. We see, for example, when it mentions in connection with Avodim Knanim, you have the pasuk, "V'isnachaltem oisam livnechem," you will bequeath them to your sons. So we see clearly that sons yarshin. So they're saying, we understand that if there were sons, then we wouldn't even have a claim over here. And there are other psukim as well. And they're saying also if there had been any sons, then yeah, we wouldn't have a logical argument, because if their whole argument was based on the principle, was based on the analogy with Yibum, as the Gemara had just said, well, if Tzlachot had left any sons, then there'd be no question in the first place. Obviously, then there's no Yibum, so therefore they wouldn't really have a leg to stand on. So now they're saying that that because he doesn't have a son is why we're speaking up in the first place. So they're Darshanius then, in that they know how to deduce one thing from another and come up with a very logical argument based on the parts of the Torah that they know so far. So the Gemara asks, okay, Vahotanya Bas, but now we have another Braisa that phrases it differently, that says, where they said, if he had a daughter, then we wouldn't be asking. Now, what does that mean? He has daughters. He has those five daughters right there standing and talking. So the Rashbam says that actually the Gemara is asking, not just as a question against what we just said, but Bechlal, the question is, how on earth do you understand that Braisa? The Machshon himself can't understand what the Braisa is supposed to mean. What do you mean if he had a daughter? He has daughters. Marsha says that no, what the Machshon is saying, later soon the Gemara is going to tell us that all of the girls, that all of the Nois Tzlafchad were over 40 years old at the time, and Bederach HaTeva, never having been married yet, they wouldn't have had children. As the Gemara is going to talk about soon. So the Rashbam explains, this Braisa, the Machshon is saying, the Braisa seems to be saying that they're saying, if we had any sisters who were below 40 years old and are capable of having children, then we would have sent them to make this argument on our behalf, because then Bederach HaTeva, they would get married, they would have children, and fine, even if the Nachla doesn't go directly to us, it would end up going to the sons that they have. But is that what it means? In that case, then it means they don't necessarily know that much, because they don't know yet that daughters, they don't know yet that there's a logical argument that daughters yarshin. Maximum they know is there's a logical argument that if they have sons, then they should end up yarshining. Anyway, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, smem you can bas. So Rabbi Yirmiyah says, well, you have to delete the word bas. There's no way. It would be a doichet to say that the Braisa is saying something like that they're saying if he had a daughter, because the fact is he did have daughters. So therefore, you have to delete it and replace it with the word ben, like in the previous Braisa. Abaya says, no, what they meant is you can still keep the Braisa's wording as it was. And it's saying, afilo hoya bas le ben. Even if we had brothers and they had since passed away and they left daughters, also lo dibanu, we also wouldn't speak, which shows then that they were darshanias in that they understood correctly what we learned from the psukim, as we had earlier in the peret. The Gemara had mentioned the whole argument between the chachamim and the tzedukim on this point, where the tzedukim held that if you have a man and passed away and left a living daughter and a living son's daughter. So his son had since passed away, but he left a daughter. The tzedukim argued that they should inherit equally, whereas the halacha is not so. The halacha is that that granddaughter gets the entire Yerusha through her father, because her father, being a son, goes ahead of his sister. So then, according to that, Shabbaya says that's what the Braisa means when it says bas. They're saying not if he had daughters. Of course, he has daughters. We're all standing right here. But if he had even a granddaughter or anything like that, we wouldn't even be asking, because we understand, like the Chachamim say, and not like the Tzedukim, that in that case, that granddaughter or hypothetical niece would yarshin the entire thing, and we wouldn't even be asking the question. So we see that they were darshanius. And Sidkonius, hein? In what way do we see that they were Sidkonius? Shalom Nisu, Ela Lahogun Lahen. They waited only to get married to somebody who's suitable for them. Namely, in other words, like this, when they, as the Gemara is going to talk about in a minute, they were over 40 years old, and the Gemara is going to point out, really, even after the leaders of Shevet Menashe came with their argument to Moshe at the end of Parshas Maaseh, that if they marry out into another Shevet, they would be able to marry, then their Nachla is going to end up getting transferred from one Shevet to another, and Hashem says, you're right, Kain Mata B'nei Yosef Dovrim, women in such a situation have to marry within their shevet. The Gemara is going to talk about in a little bit further on Daf Kuf Chof, that Benois Tzlofchot are actually an exception to that rule. They could marry whoever they want, and it's only an Eitz Tova that they should marry within their shevet. Nevertheless, they were Tzidkonius, and they went Lefnim Meshuras Adin, and they also went and married within their shevet, and they didn't avail themselves of that exemption. So in that sense, they were Tzidkonius.
Say what? How were they Darshanius? What made them so Darshanius?
So Darshanius, we just said that they were able to derive logically the point the Gemara had said, if our father had a son, then we would understand already, that we would understand from previous information that we have, whether from Parshas Nachlas itself, according to Rashbam, or whether from other Pesukim in the Torah, according to Tosfos, that our brothers, if we had any, would Yarshin, and we wouldn't have a claim. So they were Darshanius to be able to understand that point, and also to be able to understand it, to be able to understand the Pesukim themselves correctly, and also that in that case, the sons inherit exclusively and the daughters don't. And also, as Abaya had pointed out, that also if we had a niece, if we had had a brother who left behind a daughter, that she would yarshin exclusively instead of us, and also we wouldn't be coming with a complaint. So all of that marks them as darshanius, that they're capable of darshining and explaining with the nuances and the corollaries that we can deduce from the psukim in order to present their claim properly. As far as Tzidkonius, the Kli Yoker actually has a very interesting explanation. He says, besides that the Gemara is saying over here that it's Tzidkonius in the sense that they went Lefnim Meshuras Adin, the word Tzidkonius is also related to the word Tzedakah. So there, he says, why were they so eager to get a share in Eretz Yisrael? Not so much because they want to have a plot of land to call their own, but because they want to have the ability to do the mitzvahs atluyas va'aretz, to be able to do all the mitzvahs that involve giving tzedakah from your crops, leket and shikha and peah and maiseroni and so forth. So that the fact that they wanted that in the first place marks them as tzidkonius, that they want to have the maximum ability to fulfill the various forms of tzedakah. The Gemara continues, Toni Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, אפילו קטנה שבהן לא ניסס פוחס מהבוים שונה. Of the five, of these five women, when they did get married, the youngest of them was over 40 years old. Because again, as we just said, they were waiting to marry Lahogun Lahen. They weren't just going to marry anyone. They wanted to marry somebody who's taka, the proper zivug for them, and therefore they, even though, as the Gemara is going to go on to say now, usually a woman marries at such an advanced age, she may not even have children, but they waited. Tosfos points out that we talked about yesterday about who Tzlofchad was, what exactly was his chet, because of which he died, and you have Rabbi Akiva saying in the Gemara and Shabbos that he was the Mekoshesh Eitzim. Well, that story happened at the very beginning of the 40 years in the desert. Either Rashi mentions on the Pasuk one opinion, it was shortly after Hashem had given the mitzvah of Shabbos. Earlier we had said that it was after the Chet HaMeraglim, and Tosfos brings over here the point that he was doing, which we discussed yesterday, that he was doing it in order to demonstrate to them, even after the Chet HaMeraglim, mitzvahs are still binding and a person can still be executed for failing to observe them. So that being the case then, so he was killed near the beginning of the 40, near the beginning of the 40 years. If we say he was one of the Ma'apilim as well, that was also near the beginning of the 40 years. So therefore, and now B'nai Tzlofchad are coming forward with their claim at the end of the 40 years. So therefore, that justifies Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov saying that even the youngest of them was at least 40 years old at the time. Now, so the point is, so the question is, Eini, is that so? How could they wait until after 40 to get married? If a woman gets married at the age of less than 20 years old, yoledes ad shishim, then usually she'd be capable of giving birth until 60 years old. Bas eshrim, if she marries only after 20 years old, yoledes ad arboim, then usually she would be able to have children only until 40. There are exceptions, but in general, these are the general brackets. Bas arboim, and if a woman first gets married, and we're talking about each time when she gets married at a certain age, meaning also she has her first relations at that time. Bas arboim, and if she is married only after age 40, shuvani yoledes. And generally, she's not going to have children. So one way of understanding is that the question is that the question is on them how they could wait that long. And the Gemara is going to give an answer. That's according to the Rashbam. The Teres Chaim asks, what's the question in the first place? Women don't have a mitzvah period of Rivia. So from their point of view, there's no problem with waiting. So he explains that really the question is, then how did any men marry them in the first place? Like this, the Pasuk says, they ended up marrying relatives from their Shevet, but how would those men marry them if they're over 40 in B'derech HaTeva? At this point, they're not going to have children. So the answer is, Elamatech Shetzitkonias, saying again, we just said that they were Tzitkonias. So therefore, Nasa Lehem Nes, therefore Nes was done for them. So Rashbam explains they could actually depend on, they were certain of their tzidkus that Hashem is going to make them a nest like Yecheved, as the Gemara is going to go on to say now about Yecheved having Moshe at a very advanced age, and therefore they relied on that, and therefore they could wait with getting married until then. Mefoshim talk about that maybe it's a, since when are you allowed to rely on a nest? And so one answer is, in fact, that you have, there are people who are an exceptionally high level of connection to Hashem, and therefore they're allowed to rely on such a ness. For them, it's almost not considered a ness. For them, it's considered almost like a different form of teva, because they're doing it completely l'shem shamayim. So now we're saying they had a nes happens then like Yecheved. Now, it's not exactly the same that Rashbam points out, because Yecheved may well have been married before 40. With her, the nes is that she had a child at such an advanced age. But still, the point is, there are sometimes nisim where Hashem does, and we don't just mean, for example, like this, the Gemara could have brought Sarah, but the difference is that Sarah, it was in order to start the whole Jewish people. So therefore, Hashem did the nest for that. But we see that even on an individual level, for individual tzaddikim with tzidkonius, then Hashem does such nissing, as we find by Yecheved, dichtiv, by Yelach Ishmi Beis Levi, by Yikachas Bas Levi. The story of Moshe's birth begins saying that a man from the Shevet Levi went and married a daughter of Levi, and that's Amram married Yecheved. So now, why is he calling him Bas Levi? Efshe Bas Meo Shloshim Shana. She was 130 years old at the time. V'kara la Bas, and we're calling her a Bas. and which suggests like a young girl, and it should call her Isha. Where do we see that she was 130? Later on in the parak, says it actually brings it in the psukim. That now you have when in Parshas Vayigash, when it talks about when the Jewish people came down to Mitzrayim, when Yaakov and his family came down to Mitzrayim, so it says there were 70 of them altogether. But then when you count up the names over there, you find only 69. So who's the 70th? Zuyecheved. She was conceived on the way down to Mitzrayim, and then she was born between the walls as they were coming into Mitzrayim. Ashmam says when you say Beina Choymus doesn't actually mean between the walls. It means in Mitzrayim, but because we said that she was conceived on the way, then therefore it uses the expression Beina Choymus for where she was born. So in other words, it doesn't mean between the, some Mephoshim say that that's what it means. In other words, like there were two walls, and she was born as they had entered the first wall before they had entered the second. But the Ashmam says just between the walls can also mean within the walls, meaning of Mitzrayim. Whatever the case, the point was that she's the 70th. She was born when they came into Mitzrayim. Dichtiv, and we know that because another pasuk says Ashi Yolda Oisel Levi b'Mitzrayim in Parshas Pinchas. It mentions that she was born to Levi in Mitzrayim, and why does it have to specify that? It means Leidasa b'Mitzrayim v'Harosa Shalevi b'Mitzrayim. She was born in Mitzrayim, but she wasn't conceived there. She was conceived earlier. Elsewhere, Tosfos deals with the question how Levi could have relations with his wife when it's during a time of famine, and there's a considerable discussion about that point. Anyway, the point is that Yocheved was born at the time when they entered Mitzrayim, and since, as the Rashbam explains at some length over here, altogether the Jewish people were 210 years in Mitzrayim, because we know when it says in Pasuk, when Hashem tells Avraham, Va'avodim be'inu oisam arba me'es shana, doesn't mean they were actually 400 years in Mitzrayim. The actual lifespans of the people involved don't even add up to 400, so it means they were 400 years from when Yitzchak was born until Yetzias Mitzrayim. Of that, they actually spent 210 years in Mitzrayim. Now, since Moshe was 80 when by Yetzias Mitzrayim, as the Pasuk says, then that, so 210 minus 80 equals 130. So it comes out Yocheved was 130 when she had Moshe. The Evan Ezra, by the way, on the Pesukim has a big problem with that, because he says if so, then the Torah should really highlight that ness. What do you? The Torah makes such a big deal of Sarah having a baby at age 90. Shouldn't the Torah make a much bigger deal of Yocheved having a baby at 130? The Ramban deals with that, and then also at some length, and answers that no, listen, the Torah doesn't mention every single ness that happened to every tzaddik. No, the Torah focuses on Nisim where a Navi had said so before, where a Malach had told it before. So here with Yocheved, we don't find there was no Navi or no Malach had said it's going to happen. Hashem made it happen because Hashem loves the tzaddikim and does special things for them. Whereas by Sarah, it was actually foretold by a Malach, so therefore the Torah makes a big deal of it. Anyway, our Gemara obviously follows, doesn't follow the Evan Ezra, it doesn't agree with the Evan Ezra on that, because we are saying that Yocheved was 130 when she had Moshe. So the point is that Hashem made a nest for her. Now, to be sure, the Ritva points out, really, it's not, we're not saying, in a way, the Ritva says, look, the ness is not so much that she was 130, because, you know, you're for you, so what? So Miriam and Aaron were also, they were only a couple of years older than Moshe each, and they were also born then. If Moshe was born when Yocheved was 130, then Miriam and Aaron were both born when Yocheved was in her 120s. So the real ness is, as the Gemara is going to go on to say over here, that she became youthful again. So that's the Gemara's answer, is why are we calling her Bas Levi rather than calling her Isha, rather than calling her a woman? So as a mature woman, so it means Omer Yehuda, so Amai Korla Bas. So why is she being called Bas? Why doesn't the Torah mention her by name? Why is it saying Bas that suggests that she's a young that she's a young woman? So Omer of Yehuda Bazvida Melamed Shenil Debal Simon Enayros. That's exactly what happened. That the pasuk is telling us that signs of youth reappeared in her. Nisadin Habasar, her skin became soft again, even though B'derech HaTeva, 130-year-old woman would have her skin would be very 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 would be very very hard and wrinkled. Nispashtu Akmatin, and all the wrinkles smoothed out. V'chazra Yoyfi, and her beauty came back to where to what it was originally. So therefore, so that's the Torah calls her Bas in token of that. So again, so that's the 12 says that's really what we're focusing on. The nest is not so much that she had a baby at 130, but that her youthfulness returned. So this is the same way. Then B'nai Tzlofchad could rely on that that Hashem is going to do a similar nest for them, that even though they're above 40. And as you said, when a woman is married for the first time above 40, B'derech HaTeva, she's not going to have children, but nevertheless, they knew that that they're going to be different. So they could wait, and therefore men could marry them, knowing that they're still going to have children with them because of for the same reason.
What about the fact that, we're not allowed to rely on a nest?
So that's, I just said a couple of minutes ago, that one explanation of that is you have certain exceptional people who are on such a high level of connection to Hashem that they are allowed to rely on such a nest.
How do you know they're exceptional enough? That means.
Well, that's how it is. In other words, you have some for some. Put it this way: think of, for example, as far as making a living. For example, for most of us, we have to make a keli in the regular way. We have to go to our job and do it, and then rely on over Hashem alekecha b'chol asher ta'aseh. Then you have those exceptional people who are like the Jewish people in the desert, where Hashem provides for them directly without them having to make that kind of keli. The keli that they make is by davening and learning. So, in other words, in a sense, we can call it a nest, but in another sense, such people are on such a level that for them, it's not even really a nest. It's a different kind of derech hateva. So the same way we're saying over here, that they were on such a level that they're able to rely on that, and that their husbands could recognize their potential husbands could recognize that, and therefore that they would be able to marry them, knowing that they're still going to be able to have children.
But did the husband know that? Maybe they knew that, but were the husband who were not exceptional,
First of
allowed
all,
to
we don't
rely
know that
on
the
a
husbands
protection?
weren't exceptional as well. But second of all, that's the Toras Chaim makes exactly that point. He says that was the Gemara's question in the first place. That was the Gemara's point in the first place by mentioning that they were above 40 and that a nest was done for them. The question is not so much. Now, here the Rashbam explains that the question of the Gemara was why did they wait until after 40 to get married, knowing that they might not have children. That's the Toras Chaim is saying, so what? They're not chayiv and puruvu anyway. Let them marry at whatever age they want. So therefore, the question is really more on their husbands. How could any men marry them knowing that they that b'derech hateva, they're not going to have children? And the answer is mitoshe tzidkonius, and because they were known to be tzidkonius, therefore nasa lahen nes, therefore nes wasn't going to happen, and it was known, and anybody who was going to marry them knew that such a nes is going to happen for them. And also, in fact, the Toras Chaim explains that there happened to them, so there an actual sign of it, similar to Yecheved. We're saying over here that Nildeba Simone Nairus, that her youthfulness returned, the same way with the Bnei Tzlofchad, even though they were in their 40s or 50s or however old they were, nevertheless, also their youthfulness returned, and therefore it was obvious that Hashem is doing a nest for them, and therefore that they are going to have children.
Did the men know that they asked Hashem these questions before they married
Well, they
them?
knew that they had asked the question about Nachla because that was a public thing. They came, as we said, they came to the Beis Medrash and asked everyone, and then Hashem said, "Kain b'nos tzlofchad dovra." So yeah, it was clear that they had done that. But now later on, when Shevet Menashe, when the leaders of Shevet Menashe came with the problem, then in that case, their Nachla is going to end up going to another Shevet, and Hashem says, "Yes, any women in that situation should marry within their Shevet," and b'nos tzlofchad ended up doing so. So yeah, b'pashtus, the whole story was well known by that point. But the point is, we're saying in addition, they were tzidkonius, and therefore, and as the Toras Chaim explains, there were actual visible signs of it that their simoni nairus were returning, and therefore the potential husbands could marry them, being secure in the point that Hashem is obviously doing nisim for them, and therefore they're going to have children.
So the men were not such great tzaddikim if they knew all about it, and they
Okay.
anticipated basically.
Okay, so fine. So we don't know what
And
caliber of men they were. They were obviously great enough to marry such a Sidconius, but yeah. All right, anyway, let's go on. So the Gemara also digresses, since we're mentioning about Yecheved and about how her youthfulness returned. So now the Pasuk says Vayikach. The Pasuk says that a man from Shevet Levi went, Vayikach hasbas Levi, and he took and he married the daughter of Levi. So the question is, Vayikach, what do you mean he married her as if it's their first time? Vayachzer, it should say that he remarried her, because as we know, Amram and Yecheved had been married earlier, and then Amram had separated from her because of Pares Gzeira. And then we have the whole story where Miriam says to him, your Gzeira is worse than Pares because you're preventing children from being born and all. So now he remarried her. Actually, the Rashbam says that he remarried her because Miriam had said in Nevuah that from this marriage is going to come the son who's going to redeem the Jewish people from Mitzrayim, which is Moshe. Elsewhere, the Gemara implies that it was more that he remarried her based on Miriam's logical argument that your Gzeira is worse than Pare, that everybody's following you and no children are going to be born at all. Whatever the case, why is the pasuk saying Vayikach as if it was a new marriage when it's a remarriage? Means that Amram, when he remarried Yecheved, he taka made it as if it was a first marriage. Hoshiva ba'apirion, he had Yecheved sit in an apirion, which is a chuppah or a litter or something like that, something fancy, like the kind of thing that a kala is usually placed in. But Aaron and Miriam b'shorim in front of her, and Aaron and Miriam are singing in front of her. And they were happy over the fact that Miriam, as a girl over there, as a young girl, had already had a nevuah that from this marriage is going to be born Moshe Rabbeinu. So they're singing from the simcha of that. And the Malach HaShoros also joined in the simcha, and they were saying, like the pasuk says, Ema bonim smecha, the mother of the children is joyful. So in other words, so therefore that's why it says Vayikach. Marsha points out actually that it maybe wasn't so well known to everybody else that Chosra Manal Rusa, that she had regained her youthfulness, that Hashem is going to make this nest that Hashem is making this nest happen. Miriam also hadn't necessarily publicized her nevuah so much. She had told Aaron that it's going to happen, and then she had told her parents, but it wasn't necessarily well known to everybody else. So but the Malachim are saying Ema Bonim Smecha, that there is a good reason for Simcha over here because it is actually going to happen according to this Nevuah of Miriam. So in fact, Marsha continues, the word Aim itself stands for Aaron and Miriam, who are the ones that are now are dancing in front of her, and it also stands for Aaron and Moshe, who are the two brothers who are going to end up bringing about the Geula. Marsha says another interesting point as well. All of this, you know, we have every day now during Sukkot, we're saying Havel and we're saying this pasuk, Ema Bonim Smecha. So he points out another interesting remez in it as well. Right after the words, Ema Bonim Smecha, you have B'tzeis Yisroel Mitzrayim. So there's a direct connection. As a result of this Ema Bonim Smecha of Yecheved and Amram's remarriage and the simcha that there was over there, because of that, came about the next stage in the drama was B'tzeis Yisroel Mitzrayim. Anyway, so the point is, again, so this happened to Yecheved, so now we're saying that something similar happened with Bnos Tzlofchad.
How can Miriam, being from Shevet Levi, had become a Nevuah?
Why not? A person can be from any Shevet and become a Navi. Moshe and Aaron themselves are from Shevet Levi as well, and they're Nevi'im. What does one have to do with the other?
It's from Yehuda, usually.
No, that's Malachim. That's kings come from Yehuda. Nevi'im can be from any Shevet. And so there's a Gemara, in fact, in Sukkah, where Rabbi Eliezer says there's not a single Shevet that didn't produce Nevi'im for the Jewish people.
So we say the Kohanim and the Nevi'im, they have the, you know, the Avoda and the Shira.
They have Avoda, but they can also be Nevi'im. They can also be Nevi'im. We have a number of examples. We have a number of examples in Tanakh of Nevi'im who are from Shevet Levi. Okay, let's go on. The Gemara continues. Now let's go back to Bnos Tzlofchad. Lahalam Menana Kosev Derech Gedulasam. In Parashas Maaseh, when it talks about how they got married in the end, it lists them in order of age. Matiana Machla Tirtza Chogla Milko Vnoya Bnos Tzlofchad. They got married. Now, the Rashbam points out, since in general we have a younger sister shouldn't get married before an elder one, so that implies that was the age order, and they got married in age order. There is, by the way, Adayim Azeh, you have that concept. Lavan had first expressed it to Yaakov, Lo Yosachem Bimkamenu, Losses at Zeiro Lefnei Abachira. The proper thing is that girls, and to a certain extent siblings in general, should get married in age order. There are a number of things about it, details about that from Moshe Feinstein and from the Rebbe, about nuances and details of that, where you have, for example, where a younger daughter has found her zivug before the elder one, then it's not like it's also for her to get married, but she should at least ask mechila, and there's different details in that. Anyway, so we would assume that when the Pasuk in Parashas Maaseh mentions their marriages, it's talking derech gedulasan, v'kan derech chochmasan. Earlier in Parashas Pinchas, when they're first introduced, it lists them in a different order. In particular, Tirza and Noya are switched around. The second and the fifth are switched around. So why is that? So it must be v'kan derech chochmasan. It means that in the second Pasuk, that in the earlier Pasuk in Parashas Pinchas, it's listing them in the order of their chochma. Because otherwise the psukim are going to contradict one another, so it's more logical to assume that that's what it is, that one of them is, that one of them is in eight, and if one of them is in age order, necessarily the other one, if there's not stamina, random order, must be derech chokhmasan. Messiah le Rav Ami, which in that case, that supports what Rav Ami says. The Amar Rav Ami, be yeshiva holocha chokhma. Rav Ami says, when it comes to seating arrangements, whether we're talking about a din Torah or any other kind of thing, wherever you have, where they're learning and teaching Torah, then holachacha chokma, then you see who gets the more important place is the one who's the greater chokma. The mesiba, but when it comes to a party, for example, a wedding, then holachacha zikna, then you go. Then the more important places go to the elder people first. So therefore, by their weddings, the older girls are getting married first, whereas when it comes to a matter of chokhmah, when it comes to them presenting their question in the Beis Medrash and getting the answer, then the pasuk lists them derech chokhmah. So Rav Ashi says it's not so simple, actually. It's really only when we talk about that you use chokhmah as the primary factor in one case, or zikna as a primary factor in another place, is only if he's exceptionally chokham compared to the others, or exceptionally old compared to the others. So in other words, the Rashbam says, if you have, for example, you have somebody, you have Reb Reuven and Reb Shimon, let's say, and Reb Reuven is older than Reb Shimon, but not significantly older, and Reb Shimon is wiser and toter than Reb Reuven. We're not going to override the Chachma for the sake of Zikna. Only where he's Zokin Muflag, only where he's exceptionally older, a good deal older than the other one, then we would put him first. There's actually a machlokes rishonim about that. What happens if neither one is muflag? They're both approximately the same age, and they're both approximately the same chachma. So you have the Rashbam says that in general, we would go according to the zokin. If you have that, then even by your yeshiva, we would still put the zokin ahead. It's not an embarrassment to the younger chacham because it's obvious that we're honoring the elder one because he's older. So only if who'd maflik b'chachma. So only if the younger one is exceptionally wiser in Torah, then we would put him first. Then you have the Ritva learns the other way around. Chochma always comes first, and the Ran learns that then you go back to the original rule, which is b'yeshiva versus b'mesiba. So in short, you have three different opinions of Rishonim. What happens if they're both approximately all the same? Here, necessarily, apparently, we have to say, since the pasuk is making a point of the order of the daughters from which we learn this point, it would have to mean, therefore, that at least some of the daughters are more muflag, bezikna, are considerably older than the others. In other words, we would have otherwise thought that maybe the girls were born approximately a year or so apart, or 2 years apart, as is often typical, but we're saying not necessarily. It may be that there was a considerable age gap between them. Tonet ve'Rabbi Shmuel, on the other hand, in a brisa from the yeshiva, Rabbi Shmuel, we learn differently. B'nai Slavchot Shkulis, are you? The B'nai Slavchot were all equal in their qualities. So that's why it lists them in different orders. Shenema Vatiyena, as the Pasuk says, when they got married, it says Vatiyena, they became wives, etc. And the word Vatiyena means in plural, they became. And it didn't need to say that word at all. So it means Havaya Achas Lekulon, means all of them have the same kind of being. They're all fairly equal as far as their qualities. So therefore, so in other words, Tonet Ve'Rabbi Shmuel is saying you don't necessarily have a proof from here for the concept that we said that there would be a difference between yeshiva and mesiba about who goes first. It might be that here by B'nai Slavchot it lists them in different orders in different places because they were shkulas zukazu because they're all on an equal level. You have something similar, by the way, for example, where the Gemara mentions elsewhere, for example, usually Moshe is mentioned before Aaron, but you have one place where Aaron is mentioned before Moshe to show that they were shokel, to show that in certain ways they were equal in their qualities. And we have other examples like that as well. Okay. The Gemara continues. Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Bnois Tzlafchor hu truly nosel chol ha-shvatim. These Bnois Tzlafchor are actually able to marry men from any shevet. Shenema latoy beinem tiyen al anoshim. When Bnei Menashe come with their question about what do we do as far as that the Nachla is going to be transferred to another shevet. So Hashem says latoy beinem tiyen al anoshim. They can marry whoever they see fit. However, then the pasuk continues that they should marry within their shevet. So Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel is saying that only the first part of the pasuk applies to them. What about the rest of the pasuk that they should only marry within their shevet? That's Eitzah Tova Hisiyan Akasu. That's the pasuk is giving, Hashem is giving them good advice. That they should only marry somebody who's suitable for them. In other words, the best thing would be for them to marry within their shevet, but they're not required to, unlike other women in that situation who are actually going to be required to marry within their shevet. Now, the question would be, why should that be so? Why is Hashem showing favoritism to them or something? So there's a couple of achronim that talk about the Chassam Sofer and the Meshech Chochma and then the Stipler all talk about various angles on it. We said before that they were over 40 when they got married, and b'derech hateva they wouldn't have had children. So Hashem is saying it would be a good idea for them to marry within their shevet, because if it's just a matter of, if they're not going to have children, now we learned extensively earlier in the perek about the whole matter of their husbands yarshining them. But here the Gemara had brought over their psukim to try and prove the point, but nevertheless, a number of Rishonim learn that all those psukim are basically asmachtas, and that really the concept that a husband yarshins his wife is really only dirabbanan. The Rambam, for example, writes that in several places. So then, according to that, that takana wouldn't have been made yet. So now, if their husbands don't yarshin them on a daraisa level yet, on daraisa level, and the takana dirabbanan they will hadn't been made yet, and b'derech hateva, then they're not going to have children. So there's no problem of nachla going to a different shevet. It's going to revert back to their father's shevet anyway. So therefore, there's no problem of them marrying outside of their shevet. But Hashem is giving them an etzah tova, given that I want to do a nest for you. I want you to be able to have children, and your children are going to belong to a different shevet. If you marry men from a different shevet, best that you marry within your shevet, and that will make it possible for me to do this nest for you, and for you to have children without it infringing on the rights of your shevet. So that's the Eitzah Tova. Then if we say that their husbands yarshin them daraisa, as we did learn earlier in the parak, and the Ravid in fact learned that those were actually droshes gemuras, not just an asmachta, then okay, the point is that Hashem is saying that I know that you're gonna end up outliving your husbands, but nevertheless, Eitzah Tova, that you should marry within your shevet anyway, and that way again there's no problem. It's true, your husbands are not gonna end up yarshining you and taking it away from your shevet, but nevertheless it would be an Eitzah Tova for you to marry within your shevet, and again that way when you do have children, then the nachla will stay within your shevet. So that would be why it's not a requirement for them. It's only an Eitzah Tova. So the Gemara continues. So the Gemara continues. Moisiv Rabba. So Rabba says, what do you mean that it doesn't apply to them? A Brisa says, when the Pasuk says, So here the Gemara is going to, here the Braisa is going to focus on a different din, a completely different din, and then relate the lashon of it back to here. So the pasuk says, in connection with Koyanim having to be careful to eat truma only when they're tahor. So the pasuk says emer aleichem, emer aleichem. So the pasuk says emer aleichem l'doreh seichem. And the pasuk starts off, say to them. Hashem says to Moshe, say to them for their generations. So what does that mean? Emer aleihem means lo'osin ha'omnim al Har Sinai. Emer aleihem means tell this to the people who are right now here by Har Sinai. L'doreh seichem, and when it continues, for your generations, elu doreh saboyim, means that this mitzvah is also addressed to future generations. Now, you have to ask, why does the Torah have to specify both the parents who are there at the time of Matan Torah, at the time when this mitzvah is given, and the future generations? Because we find a different mitzvah that applies only to only that applies only to one generation and not to the other. Namely, ba'ovis who are mevchobas yereshes nachla, Because we find when it comes to and when it comes to parents versus children, we find this mitzvah of that Hashem is saying that only that girls who are going to be yarshin property in Eretz Yisrael from their father can only marry within their shevet, that applied only in that generation, as the Gemara is going to explain further on Daf Kuf Chaf Aleph. It's going to go into more detail how we know that it applied only in that generation. Famously, we have when the Sanhedrin decided that point and made it official that it only applied to that generation was on Chamisha Asaba'ov, and that's one of the things we celebrate on that day, that hutra shvatim lova zebazen, that the shvatim are allowed to freely intermarry. Because the point is, in other words, before we should make the point, Hashem really wanted to make sure just that in the first generation, when they're coming into Eretz Yisrael, the nachla of each shevet should stay intact. After that, if it gets mixed up by people marrying within shvatim, by people marrying across shvatim, then it's not so bad. Anyway, so therefore, so we're saying that so there you have a mitzvah that applied only to that generation. And vice versa, Bahama mitzvahs and the stava bonim, shlen stava ovis. Then you have the other way around. You have lots of mitzvahs that apply only to the children who came into Eretz Yisrael and not to their fathers, not to their parents. For example, all the mitzvahs at Luyas Marets. So therefore, so chutzrach loyma ovis, chutzrach loyma bonim. So therefore, so because of that, so hom ipneshi yesh ba'avos she'in rabbanim. So because you have mitzvahs that applied only to one generation, only to the first generation, and not to the second, v'yesh ba'avonim she'in ba'avos, and vice versa, only to the later generations, and not to the earlier one in the midbar. Chutzrach lema avos, chutzrach lema banim. Therefore, when it comes to the mitzvah of koyanim eating truma only when they're tahor, then the pasuk has to stress that it applies both now and in future generations. And we learn from that to all other mitzvahs, unless otherwise specified, a mitzvah applies in this generation of the Dor HaMidbar as well as all future generations. Anyway, the point is, the Gemara is asking, Katani Mias Ba'avas, who I'm of Chobasi Yoreshes Nachla. So here the Pasuk is saying it applies to that generation, implying that it applies to the entire generation, including Bnei Tzlafchad themselves. They're required by a mitzvah saseh to marry only within their shevet. Whereas you're telling me before, here Shmuel had told us that no, it didn't apply to them. So the Gemara says, who most of love homo farakla? So Rabbah asks the question based on the Braisa. So katani mias ba'avasu emu chabasi reshes nachla. So the pasuk is, so the Braisa is saying by the ancestors, by the first generation, it says any daughter who yarshins property, and that would include nois slavchot. So what are you telling me? They're the exception. Who most of love homo farakla? So Rabbah asked the question. He himself answered, yeah, it is an exception. Levar nois slavchot. It means with the exception of nois slavchot. Yes, this mitzvah was binding on all other women who are in this situation, but Benos Slavchot were exempted from it. And again, you have this point over here that since Bederach HaTeva, they weren't going to have children, and their husbands may or may not yaushin them Alpi Din Torah, then therefore for them, it's not such an urgent matter that they marry within their Shevet. However, if they want the nest should happen and they're going to have children, then they should marry within their Shevet, and that will prevent the Nachla from going to a different Shevet. The Meshech Chochma, by the way, makes a very interesting point in this connection. He says, you know, when they first came with their claim that we should be entitled to a portion in Eretz Yisrael, so it mentions they said to Moshe and Elazar and the Nesiim and Kol Ha'eda, the whole Sanhedrin. Now at the end, when Shevet Menashe comes with their claim and says, what's going to happen now? These women are going to marry outside our Shevet, and the Nachla is going to end up going to a different Shevet. It only says that they spoke to Moshe and the Nesiim. It doesn't mention Elazar. Why not? So he says, because Elazar is the Kohen Gadol who wears the Urim Betumim. What the Urim Betumim decides is irrevocable. Now, Shevet Menashe knew they don't want to make a permanent rift between the Shvatim, that no Shevet, that you're going to have situations where a person from one Shevet is not allowed to marry within another. We want the Shvatim to be able to freely intermarry. We want the Jewish people to be as united as possible. So they knew this only has to be a temporary measure until they're settled in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, until that first generation passes, at least. So therefore, so they Davka did not consult with Elazar in order that they shouldn't get an answer from the Urim Batumim, because then it would be for all time. In the end, they themselves wanted that it should be only for that generation. And in fact, that was how the mitzvah was stated. And that was how eventually the Sanhedrin decided just that they learned from the Psukim themselves that it applies only in that generation. And again, as the Gemara talks about later on, that's one of the things we celebrate on Chamisha Asabah. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Now let's analyze this point. Omar, we said in the Braisa, but obviously Omar Chobasi Reshes Nachla was saying that this din about marrying within their shevet applies only in that generation. But obviously ain but bonim loy, so it only applies to the first generation, but not to the children. My mashma, where do we see that in the psukim that it's limited to that generation? Omar Rava, Omar Kro, because the pasuk says Zeh Dover. This is the word. This is the statement that Hashem is saying. Meaning Dover Zeh Lo Yehi Noig Ela B'Dor Zeh. Meaning the word Zeh Dover, limit it that it applies only in this one generation. So in other words, the word zehadover, we just said that b'nois slofchod are an exception, but we're saying the zehadover is it's not referring to b'nois slofchod, because again they're allowed to marry to other shvatim. It means any other daughter, who any other woman in this situation who has to marry within her shevet. So zehadover, it applies only to them in this generation. So the Gemara asks, Omale Rabba Zuti Lirab Ashi, Elamayata, by that logic. So you're telling me every time it says a mitzvah and introduces with a Zehadover is limited to that generation. So what about Zehadover to Shchute Chutz? What about when it says Zehadover as far as the mitzvah that you're not allowed to Shech Korbanos outside the Beis Hamikdash? So where it says also it's introduced with the words Zehadova Shitziva Hashem Lamer. Are you also gonna say Hochinami Elabadurze? You're gonna say that mitzvah of Shchut Echutz, that issu of Shchut Echutz applies only in that generation? Obviously not, it applies for all time. So you see that Zehadova doesn't always limit it to that generation. So the answer is shiny hosting dichtiv ledoroisa. Fine, but by Shchut Echutz, it continues, the pasuk continues, that this should be, or at the end, after it gives that whole mitzvah, and the details of it. So it says, this shall be for them, it'll be an eternal law for them for all their generations. So therefore, so the fact that it says Zeh HaDover at the beginning is not meant to tell us that it's limited to that generation, because that would be contradicted by the pasuk at the end. Rather, it means there's a different reason why it says Zeh HaDover, as the Gemara is going to explain in a minute. What about, continues Rabbi Zuti with his question, what about Zehadova de Roshe Hamatis? What about the beginning of Parshas Matis, when it talks about the concept of Nidorim and the concept where it hints at the point that a Chocham can be Matir and Neder, and it talks about more explicitly that a father can be Mefer his daughter's Nidorim, or a husband his wife's Nidorim, as we learned back in Masech the Nidorim, all the details about that. And also it starts off Zehadova Shetziva Hashem. Are you going to say also that it means it applies only in this generation? Amalei, so Rav Ashi answers him, Hahu yalef zeh zeh mehosem. As a matter of fact, the fact that it says zeh hadover by hataras nedorim and by shchut echutz is actually meant not to say that it's limited to that generation, but rather actually, what we do is we learn a gzeira shava. Because we learn a gzeira shava from the word zehadover, just like by shchut echutz, it's for future generations as well, because it says l'doroisam, the same way we learn by gzeira shava on the word zeh, that haforas nedorim and hataras nedorim also applies in future generations. Well, so the Gemara asks, "Hai nami leilaf zeh zeh mehosam?" No, so why don't we say the same gzeira shava applies also to the women marrying outside their shevet? And Rav Ashi answers back, "Hai mai, what kind of a comparison is that?" Bishlema hosam, you can understand why you need shchut echutz and aforas nedarim, you need the gzeira shava. It's gzeira shava, you need the word zehadover for gzeira shava, because we're going to be learning other dinim from that gzeira shava. Now you have a concept called ein gzeira shava lemetzah. When you have a gzeira shava that compares two dinim, you don't just do it by halves, you apply as much as possible of the dinim of one to the other. So therefore, once we have that gzeira shava from zehadover, and the Gemara is soon going to explain what the point of that gzeira shava is, then also we learn from that since one of them is l'dorei seichem, then so is the other. But here, when it comes to women marrying outside their shevet, why would it have to say zehadover in the first place? Where there's no din that we need to learn from it to other places, or vice versa. And if it was to mean that we're going to use it for the gzeira shava, just of the point that we're going to learn that it applies for future generations, lishtik kromine, then the pasuk doesn't have to say anything at all. It doesn't have to say zehadover at all. V'ano yadayna diladorasu. And we would know, just like all mitzvahs in the Torah, many mitzvahs it doesn't explicitly say that they're for future generations, and yet we know that they do. So if the mitzvah of girls marrying within their shevet was meant for all generations, then it wouldn't have said zeh hadavar at all. It's not like we need the zeh hadavar to then use for the gzeira shava. So there's no other purpose for the zeh hadavar over there, but rather to tell us, on the contrary, it's limited to that generation. Okay, the Gemara says, my gzeira shava. What is this gzeira shava between shchutei chutz and hafaras nedarim that we're talking about? So the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Nemer kan zeh hadavar, by a foras nedarim, again by a husband, by a father or a husband being made for nedarim, and the fact that a chacham can be matur neder, which is hinted at in the pasuk over there. So it says zeh hadavar, v'nemer lahalan zeh hadavar, and by shchutei chutz, by the mitzvah of not shechting korbanos outside the Beis Hamikdash, it also says zeh hadavar. So we learn the comparison, malahalan Aaron uvana v'chol Yisrael, just like with shchutei chutz. And the mitzvah is addressed to Aaron and his sons and all Bnei Yisrael, as it says explicitly in the pasuk. After it says Zeh Hadavar Asher Tziva Hashem, so it starts off by saying, at the beginning of the pasuk it says Daber al Aaron v'al Bonav al Kol Bnei Yisrael, and then the pasuk finishes off Zeh Hadavar Asher Tziva Hashem Leimer. So just like over there, it includes Aaron and his sons and all Yisrael. Afkan Aaron uvonav v'chol Yisrael, the same way by Aforas and Darim, it means that the mitzvah was addressed to Aaron and his sons and all of Yisrael. What's the relevance of that? We're going to talk about in a minute. And the Gzeira Shava goes the other way around as well. Umakan Roshei Amatas, just like by Hafaras Nedarim, where it says that Moshe spoke to the heads of the Shvatim, Aflahalam Roshei Amatas, the same way when it comes to Shchutei Chutz, it also is applicable to Roshei Amatas, as the Gemara is going to explain soon what that means. So what does all that mean? So So you're telling me that just like by Shchutei Chutz, it specifies Aaron and his sons and all the Jewish people, so therefore also by Hafaras Nedarim, you have the same concept. L'may Hilchsa, what halacha do we need from that? What particular role do Aaron uvono v'chol Yisrael have with Hafaras Nedarim? But Pashtos, it doesn't just mean, in other words, to say that they're allowed to be made for their daughters or their wives Nedarim, and there's no particular reason we should think there's an exception for them. So Amar Rav Acha bar Yaakov Loimar comes to tell you Shafaras Nedarim b'shloisha hedyotis, that when it comes to revoking a neder, when it comes to Hataras Nedarim, okay, it's using the word hafara, but it really means Hataras Nedarim, that's done by a Beis Din. You don't need a Beis Din of smuchim. It's enough to have b'shloisha hedyotis. It's enough to have three plain people. So we learn from that from the fact that it says Kol Yisrael. Because in other words, now as if it said Aaron Uvonov Chol Yisrael, meaning that all Yisrael are on an equal level to Aaron Uvonov, and any three of them can constitute a Beis Din, can constitute a Beis Din for this purpose. So the Rashbam explains that basically what it is when it comes to Dinim Mominus. You do have an opinion that says that it's possible for two people to judge Dinim Mominus, but it's called a Beis Din Chotzuf. But when it comes to an Issur of a Neder, then you need at least three. So therefore, and the Aaron Abonav B'chol Yisrael means that all the Jewish people, whether they have Smicha or not, are on the level of Aaron Abonav for that purpose. Tosfos learns a little differently, that a Beis Din would be that when it says Roshei Hamatos would mean two people, and since a Beis Din can't be an even number of people, then it means that you have to have three. And then Tosfos goes on to explain a different way of darshaning it. Anyway, the point is that we're saying that it's enough to have Shlosha Hedyotis. We learn that from the fact that it says Aaron Uvonu V'chol Yisrael, meaning that all Yisrael are capable of doing that. So the Rashbam learns actually that it means that at least in order to be part of a Beis Din for Hataras Nedarim, he has to be at least capable of paskening halacha. He doesn't have to have smicha ish mi piyish from Moshe Rabbeinu, but he has to at least be of the level of being able to pasken halacha. And then you have other Rishonim who learn that. That's actually as far as the Yochid Mumcha. We'll talk about that in a minute. So no, the Shlosh Hedyotis just means three people who know the relevant halachas. So we're saying that any three Jews can do that. So they want to ask, what do you mean? Rosh Hamatis, what do you mean? The fact is, by Haforas Nedarim, it says the words Rosh Hamatis, the heads of the Shvatim, who are people who have smicha. So wouldn't that imply that you need people with smicha? You need mumchim in order to be matur neder. So the answer is Kid Omar of Chista, Omar of Yechanan, as Rav Chista says in the name of Rav Yechanan, that the words Rosh Hamatis means biyochid mumcha, means that you it's also possible to be matir neder with to by one individual who's a mumcha, who's an expert. After so the same way, Hochanami, the same way over here, biyochid mumcha, it means that it's one or the other. You can have Shlosha Hadyotis, which we learn from Aaron of Vana, B'chol Yisrael. In addition, you can also have one yochid mumcha, which would be, we learn that from the word Rosh Hamatis. What exactly it means mumcha, so that Rashbam learns that a mumcha would have to be his baki b'gemara, meaning that he's capable, he's a rav muvhak, he's a distinguished rav who's capable of teaching and paskening halacha, meaning even if he doesn't have smicha, as long as he has that expertise. Then the Ran, the Ramban and the Ran learn that the yochid mumcha has to have smicha ish mipi ish. And then since we don't have that nowadays, so nowadays we don't have the concept of a Yochid Mumcha being able to be Matur Neder. You do have that the Shlosha Hedyotis still works. So that's what we learn. So that's what we learn from these psukim. So that's what we learn from the Gzeira Shava of Zeh HaDavar that we apply Aaron Uvonah V'chol Yisrael over here when it comes to Afaras Nedarim. Okay, then we said, Umak kan Rosh Hamatas, Aflahalam Rosh Hamatas. Then we said that since it mentions by Nedarim, it mentions Rosh Hamatas. So the same thing applies also to Shchut Echutz, L'may Hilchza. What halacha are we learning from that? Obviously, you're not going to say it means that Shchut Echutz is also a mitzvah that's incumbent on the Nesiim. There's no reason to think otherwise. It comes to tell us that the same way as a person can be matir neder, the same way a person can be matir a neder of hekdesh. So now, suppose that you have a person that Rashbam describes. Suppose a person had an animal of kodshim and he shechted it outside the Beis Hamikdash, and now he became chayiv koras. Now he went to a chacham and was able to be matir neder. So now, then that takes away. It was never hekdesh in the first place. So therefore, he's potter from koras. So that we learn from the fact that it says Rosh Hamatzis in both connections, namely that the same way as a Rosh Hamatzis, a yochid mumcha, can be matir a neder, a regular neder, he can also be matir a neder of hekdesh. And that way he's no longer chayiv and shchut echutz. Well, the Gemara says, what about all the Beis Shammai? Da amri ain she'ela b'hekdesh. Now, what about the according to Beis Shammai, who holds that no, there's no she'ela by hekdesh. A person was makdish something by mistake. They would say that it doesn't matter. There's no pesach. There's no charotah or anything. By Beis Shammai says that doesn't work by hekdesh. And so ditnan, as we learn in a Mishnah in as we learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Nazir. Bishama says that if you made something hektish by mistake, then it's still hektish. Or Basilla Umim ain't a hektish, and Basilla says it's not hektish. So according to Basilla, in other words, it was a toast, and therefore you can, and so therefore, so the Gemara, the Rashbam explains, over there that Bishamai learns from the fact that you have a concept of tzmura. The Torah says you're not allowed to exchange one animal, an animal that's a korban, for a different animal. So the same way earlier on when you first designated an animal as a korban, then you can't afterwards revoke that by Ataras Adonim. Whereas basically we'll hold that there's a difference between them. So in other words, the point is that so obviously if Beis Shammai holds that even when there was a mistake in that regard, and the Mishnah gives there another an example of such a mistake, Beis Shammai still holds it's irrevocable. How much more so over here, where he did fully mean to be makdish this animal, and just later on he got in trouble by shechting it outside the Beis Mikdash, that Beis Shammai is going to hold there's no hataras nedarim possible for that. So according to them, what are you learning? Hai zeh v'zeh, mai avdilei. So according to them, what are we learning from this Gzeira Shava? What are we learning in that direction from Nedarim to Shchut Echutz? So the answer is Zeh HaDavar, Shchut Echutz mi boilei ala shechetu chaya veine chayv ala moilei. When it comes to Shchut Echutz, so they hold, you're right, it's not a matter of Gzeira Shava, but rather there's something different that we can learn in each case from the word Zeh HaDavar. When it comes, Zeh HaDavar is a mute, meaning only this matter. So when it comes to Shchut Echutz, they're saying we can learn from that. a person is going to be chayev only for doing shchita of an animal or a bird of karbonas outside the Beis Hamikdash. But if he did melika to the bird, and melika is the normal thing to do for a bird of karbonas inside the Beis Hamikdash, but if he does that melika outside the Beis Hamikdash, then he won't be chayev kares for it. So that's the zeh hadavar, that there's something he's not going to be chayev on. And the idea behind it would be because, in other words, outside the Beis Hamikdash, there's really no such thing as a malika. There's really no such thing as malika. Outside the Beis Hamikdash, you only have the concept of shechita. Then zeh hadavar de rosh hamatis mibaylei. As far as the zeh hadavar, when it comes to nedarim, Beis Shammai says we're not using it for gzeira shava. Rather, we're learning it. L'chocham matir v'ein baal matir. From that, we learn that when a chocham is being matir neder, he has to use a word like mutter loch. V'ein baal matir, where the husband doesn't use that phrasing, because the difference is, as we learned back in Masechet Nedarim, when a chocham is matir neder, he makes it oikra neder me'ikra, he makes it as though there was never any neder there in the first place. Whereas when it comes to a forest nedarim of a husband, it says the Gemara called it, or their megas gaias, he cuts off. From now on, the neder is not valid, but until now it was. So therefore, the chocham has to use the word of matir. The husband does not use that expression. He says mufraloch. And vice versa, baal mefer, vein chocham mefer, the husband has to be mefer, as it says in the pasuk, but the chocham is not. Because again, there's a difference in the mechanism of how a Taras Nedarim of a Chacham versus a Taras Nedarim of a husband or a father works. So therefore, so Beis Shammai says that's what we would learn from the Zeh Hadavar. You're right, we would learn from it the concept of a Taras Nedarim when it comes to Hekdesh, because Beis Shammai holds there's no such thing. So then the Gemara is going to go on to talk about how does Beis Shammai understand, how does Beis Shammai learn that three hadyotis can be made for a neder, and they learn it from a different gzera shava. But the point is, in other words, we see that so there's three places where it says zeh hadavar. One of them by women marrying outside their shevet tells us that it applied only in that generation. And then the other two, according to Beis Hillel, goes together for Gzeira Shava, to learn certain dinim of one from the other. And according to Beis Shammai, each of them teaches us a particular miut within that din itself, but not Gzeira Shava between them. But in any case, the Zeh Hadavar by the women means it applies only in that generation, and therefore that's what we were saying before. And as the Gemara is going to go on to talk about later, that's one of the things that we celebrate on Chamisha Asba'av, is when the Chachamim came up with that drasha and use that to say that, yes, from now on, people are able to freely intermarry between one shevet and another.